Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stayed glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the anime action fan sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas Primetime Metis. And I welcome you to episode 72 of The Prerogative. And I'm sorry if my voice seems a bit harsh or anything. I don't know how it sounds to you, if it sounds the normal way or whatever. I'm actually just coming over a cold, which didn't last that long because I got right on top of that virus. I beat it to a bloody pulp. Okay, I'm going to slowly... There's a joke I was heading towards, but... I'm going to slowly creep away from that joke, because that's very creepy what my mind was going, which makes sense considering the month we are. Anyways, here on episode 72 of The Prerogative, we head back to Yo-Kai Academy, as we join our gang, coming off summer break, as we review Rosario Vampire Capu Chu, or 2, excuse me, or better known as Rosario Vampire Season 2. It just has the name of Capu Chu. Capu being the sound effect that that Mocha makes. I blanked there for a second, but Mocha makes when she chops on Tsukune's neck. But again, Rosario Vampire Season 2, known as Capu Chu. As we continue our month of the Monster Mash.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the Monster Mash. From my laboratory in the castle.
And thank you, Vincent. As always, it's a joy to listen to you sing, sir. But yeah, Rosario Vampire, I'm just going to call it Season 2 for now, so I don't get caught up in being the pronunciation of Capu, because it makes me sound weird. But in Season 2, it's very interesting. Again, when I was initially doing the research for Season 1 and looking how people compared to 2 seasons, as I made the decision to do 2 different episodes, because the seasons were, I thought, different enough that at least resided to have 2 different episodes. But a lot of people really enjoyed Season 2 more than Season 1. So I was very interested to review Season 2 and sort of compare it with Season 1. And, at the end of the day watching it, I was left very confounded. And it led me to having a viewpoint, which, you know, again, we'll get to a little bit later, that I think is very interesting in comparing the series and how the series can be an example to an extent of how we do view anime. But with that, like I said, we have no emails, no comments. We just can get right into it. So our synopsis for Rosario Vampire Season 2 is a new semester has arrived for Tsukune and the gang, featuring a handful of new young girl students who are obsessed with our female cast. And it seems like among these first years emerges another vampire who holds a grudge against her sister, Mocha. What shall this grudge lead to in the future? And shall Tsukune succeed in taming this new problem child into his friends? No one knows for sure what the future holds, except this. If it gets any more wild there, they might just kill Tsukune. This is Rosario Vampire Capuchu. It's very interesting. Once again, we have another perfect example here of Rosario, the opening and ending theme being, again, to an extent, the sort of standard of this time of when anime is coming out, the years between 2005-2009, being the very sort of pop, or should I say J-pop sensation, where the ending and opening are, again, these singers singing their songs. Very true for the ending. Again, I like the ending theme, and I love the animation. I love the overall theme that the ending theme is going for. Again, with the focus being mostly on Mocha here. But again, it's very evident that it's a J-pop song. Same thing with the opening. Disco Tech, I think it's pronounced, or Disco Q, or... I'm very bad with pronunciations, I apologize. Anyways, it's just very catchy and poppy song, and I think it fits really the, of all the songs, the opening and closings that we've heard these past two, or these two seasons, I think this is the one that sort of fits more into that thing of fitting what the overall theme of the series is going to be, and just that fun, sort of, almost campy feel that this series goes for. And for that matter, I really enjoy it. And again, I love the fact that the song itself and the opening theme is a parody on itself. The parody animation, of course, in this case being, you know, that they have all the girls sort of like on a stage dancing around like they're a Japanese idol group. You know, doing choreographed, that word just snuck up on me, well-timed dance routines, and I skipped to another word. And, you know, singing together and everything, and it, I love the colors of the opening, the animation there, again, we'll get into it a little bit. I enjoy it very, very much, but I love the opening theme, very catchy, as you just heard, Definitely has a bit of that disco sound in it, which, again, the name is very apropos in that sense. But again, like I said, of all of them, I think this sort of fits more in connecting with the actual anime as far as, the theming is concerned. Then we have the score. And this is a very strange thing because, again, for the most part, same score. But the real big difference here is I think they've toned down on a lot of the great music that I very much enjoyed. And there was a lot more sort of character songs introduced into the series. It almost seemed like if episode didn't have a character song, or if there was the only one where I can think of, like, there was two in a row was is towards the end. But for the most part, a lot of them had like character songs or insert songs and stuff like that, which I found very interesting. This obviously being more of a connection, again, to the Japanese side of it. Again, the Japanese voice actresses were idols and are future or upcoming singers who, can act, at least adequately. Again, it's the difference between the Japanese and the Americans, whereas the English voice actors here are actors first, and even though they may have experience in singing and everything, they're singing... it's very funny that about 2 months ago we had that Nostalgia Critic review of Les Miserables, and they talked... I believe it was Bennett, I think it was... I could be wrong, and I apologize. The larger guy. Which, trust me, I'm a large guy, too. Us large guys have to stick together. So there's nothing... There's no malice in me saying larger guy there. But, basically saying... Talking about Russell Crowe's, singing ability. Again, he's an actor first, and singer second, and because he could... Though he was talking more how he came from a different discipline and everything. But I think it's very apropos here to the same thing. They're actors first, singers second. And it's not so much that they seem like they're faking it, but it's obviously more acting singing. Whereas in the Japanese side, again, those insert songs are there because the actresses there are singers first, actors second, and they're pretty much promoting the singers. Think of it as you will to product placement. Instead of them shoving a Pizza Hut logo into your face, they're giving a 5 minute, a 2 to 3 minute segment, I should say, of the episode to the voice actress whose character is the main focus to sing her lovely song. And if you like my singing, by the way, buy my album that comes out next Wednesday. Except that they don't put the buy my album next Wednesday. Like, oh, I love her. I wonder if she has any album. Oh, she has an album coming out next Wednesday. I can't wait to pick it up. It's more along those lines. But I think you get my point. These insert songs are very obviously, because of the Japanese side of things, basically advertising the voice actress's latest album or whatever, or basically... advertising their talent as singers. Where, again, we don't need that here, but again, it's part of the show, so you have these actresses acting and singing. It's not that their singing is bad. I want to emphasize this. In that sense, there's nothing wrong with it. They do a great job of singing them. It's fun. It's just that there's so many of them, and it happens all the time, and it's like, okay, really, we need this song. We need this, I'm trying to blink of the word. It's so evident in the 80s. The song type of clip, da, da, I'm blanking up, but we need this sort of song segue, I'm completely blanking on the name, and I apologize. But yeah, it's like to tell the story. I mean, mind you, it tells the story as any good song does, or at least whatever story it is. But it's just there's so many of them, and most of them feel like, okay, we didn't really need to spend 3 minutes with this song for these characters. It's like, okay, we could have had some more gags here. I mean, mind you, there are gags in it, but we could have had more spoken gags, more acting gags. It just felt like they could have done more stuff, and it was like they were filling time. Outside of that, though, they do bring back a lot of the great pieces that they used in the first season, and I found them very, very enjoyable, as I did in the first season. So again, that original soundtrack is back. Again, that continuity of having the same soundtrack felt very good to hear, considering that we had all these sort of insert songs. Like I said, that felt, for the most part, unnecessary. With that, let's move on to animation. And the overall animation for Rosario Vampire Season 2 pretty much stays the same. I mean, there's no really major changes to anything. In art style, and it's same studio, same everything. It may be a bit crisp, but you know, the original art itself in the season was already very crisp. So, if any improvement, very minor, very minute there. Really, the only big difference, a big change in this season, as far as animation is concerned, besides the fact that a lot of the monsters are more abstract, you know, more Japanese monsters, rather than the overall mix, though we did have the Frankenstein and the Org in Season 1, and... Well, the only, probably two, I should say. Bit more brighter colors, which is hard to believe, but it seemed like there was a bit more of a brightness to it. But really the big one is they showed nipples. And Aura's, you know, the red area on the breast. Wild Thomas, way to prove that you're an Etchy fan by noticing that. But my excuse for this, like I need an excuse, is it's very noticeable. If you watch Season 1, they don't show the nipples or the aura, but they do in Season 2. And that's really the only really major difference I can see in the art. I guess it was to make it more fan service-y. I mean, to an extent, I agree. I mean, if you're gonna have a scene with nudity, you might as well show the nudity. Don't, like, have a female character there that has no nipples, no aura. It looks unnatural. At that same point in time, I didn't really need the sort of deeper and more approach to fan service that it took. That's something about the series, is that there was a lot more sort of fan... I don't even call it mature, but a lot more acceptance of it being a fan service show and going that route, as opposed to the more sort of light natural. And not to say that it's unnatural. Well, you know, it still has that natural feel, but it's like it just went a little bit further with it. It maybe is the better way to say that. That's the only thing I could really notice. It's the same art, the same Christmas. Again, it's good, it's just that there's nothing really improved there. It may be a bit more crisper, but the art was already top-notch. Character designs, again, really not changed for the most part. Outside of maybe different episodes getting new costumes or stuff like that. Really, the only new character that appeared is Coca. And again, sort of a very moe design with her character, with the red hair and the big pigtails. Again, different. I love sort of the contrast between sort of the lighter greens that Mocha has on, and her pink hair, and sort of the more fair, natural complexion that she has, as opposed to the more sort of almost hard-edged Coca that she has. So overall, just a good character design. One thing, though, that did improve that I think they had a lot more of was the action animation. That's okay. I lied. I'm sorry. I want to find something that I like. Again, the action animation is good, but you know, it's not as much, I should say, is the better term. I tried to lie there. I want to find something good to say. And you know what? I'll get to some good stuff to say later. But it's just, I mean, there were some good action scenes here or there, but for the most part, action animation and fight animation wasn't the main focus. Main focus was comedy and fan service, which we'll get to later, to the point to where there's an entire fight scene that is not seen because, you know, it happens while sort of Ikari is, you know, knocked out. And so we're in her head, but we can hear it going on in the background. But yeah. Not really an improvement there, because there's really less of it. And the backgrounds and the special effects are pretty much the same as well. I mean, they're very good. I enjoy the different backgrounds. They have this sort of fail trip to Kyoko, episode, so it's all, to an extent, what you expect of an anime to have, of the backgrounds and the location of Kyoko. They go back to Tsukune's house, which we've seen before, again, Yokai Academy, again, looks as lovely as ever, same animation there. Really, the only big monster difference is, again, going to Mocha's father's castle, which, again, had a very, I like the sort of classic, sort of gothic European feel to it. I think they did a great job of research there, but for that part, background's the same. They still look good. The special effects, again, done very well. Again, this is the same animation show. There's not really much to talk about, as evident by the fact that I lied about the action anime. Because I want to find something to talk about here in animation, but it's all the same. It's all the same. Not much to say. Again, it's still crisp. It's still great. I don't know why I'm sort of disappointed with that. Maybe my expectations were too high by everybody being saying that the second season was so much better than the first. I expected something really different, and I don't feel like I got something different here in animation. Maybe we'll get that with acting and story. Before we get to that, I'm going to take a quick break, and I'm going to play a couple of promos. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics. And the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75. The celebration of a legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero, only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
The Phantom Zone, home of Krypton's worst criminals. But what would happen if they escaped and found themselves on a planet whose yellow sun and lighter gravity gave them fantastic superpowers? Especially when they also put Superman in the Phantom Zone in the process. Find out starting October 9th when I, Charlie Niemeyer, cover all four issues of the Phantom Zone miniseries in a special crossover between my two shows, Superman of the Bronze Age and Charlie's Geekcast. It's Kryptonian criminals versus the world's greatest superheroes, while Superman tries to get back to Earth. All this October at supermanofthebronzeage.com, charliesgeekcast.com, and supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast,
The New 52 Adventures of Superman.
I've got a few things to say about Superman.
The Carazerald Podcast,
The Superman Vidcast,
The World's Best Podcast,
and Radio KAL from SupermanHomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weeder,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Danny Sapp,
Cayman Stoll,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Eunice, and co-host Scotty V.
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into it, of course, with acting. Our cast list, of course, is first. We have Todd Hapicorn as Scooney Alno, Alexei Tipson as the outer Mocha Akashia, and Colleen Creakenbeard as the inner Mocha Akashia. Kira Vincent David as Kokoa Shizuden, Brian Palencia as Kurumo Kurono, Monica Rial as Yukari Sendo, Tia Ballard as Mizori Shikayuki, Leia Clark as Ruby Tojo, Ian Sinclair as Ganin Morioko, Morioka, Jamie Marchi as Suzuka Nekonome, and Jerry Jewell returns as well as Kuo-chan. Very interesting about this cast. Once again, most part, returning cast. They're all the same. The big difference really only being Kira Vincent Davis as Kokua, which she plays very well as this sort of controlling, manipulative little sister who is like stalking Mocha, especially at the beginning, and is always trying to hunt down and like, I'm gonna get you, Mocha, I'm gonna get you, until inner Mocha comes out, and then she's like, oh, fangirl! Again, more or less a fangirling hard. Thank you, John Stewart, for teaching me how to fangirl. over Mocha, and like, oh, big sister, kick me! Kick me hard, just like you used to, which, if that doesn't leave you disturbed, it should, just by me saying it that way. But yeah, very creepy in its own way. But, again, the entire cast returns. They do a great job with the characters. Mostly due to the fact that, again, this series, I do believe that they did the whole series as one. So it's not like they did season one, they took some time off, and then did season two. I think they got them both because they licensed them both at the same time and ended up doing them. So they did it one book. So again, no time off. Again, just right back into the characters. Really, I think one of the big differences is, again, a lot of the characters had their own episodes that they get to really have fun with. But again, it's just, there's really no difference from season one. They did a great job in season one. It's a great job here. Jerry Jewell had a bit more, of course, speaking lines. They had a lot of breaking of the fourth wall in this series. And with, you know, Kuo-chan being the sort of weapon for Kira Vincent Davis, because as it gets revealed, he's a shape-shifting bat, so he can shape-shift into weapons like a baseball bat with nails embedded into it and things like that. You know, like a giant hammer and everything. You know, he got some more speaking. In fact, there was an entire episode that he got to use a different voice for, which I thought was really good. I was like, wow, that's Jerry Jewell? Wow. You know, you listen to him so much in these episodes, you think of that squeaky voice, but then he's a little deeper, charming voice, and it's that great range that Jerry showed there, I thought was absolutely incredible. I enjoyed it very, very much. It is one of my favorite episodes in the series as a whole, because it's just so much fun as an episode. But that's really about it. I mean, there's really no, I mean, Kokua is really the only antagonist, and again, like I said, it's played more for comedy, and there's some good moments that I think Kira Vincent Davis does a great job with, but for the most part, again, they did it all in one chance. They're just as good as they were in the first season, which was spectacular. With that, let's move on to story, and with story, let's get into, you know, the story's main themes and its plot. Plot, very simple. It's the continuing adventures of Tsukune and the gang. That's it. It's the same as first season, which can probably lead to, like, why are we even going down this road? I could have probably done the review of this series in 5 minutes and talking about it's the same. But there are some subtle differences. But that being said, really the big difference is, unlike in the first season, to where, you know, there was a lot of introducing to the characters, and a lot more focus on sort of the main plot that was of the series, there's not as much here. Both a 12 episode series, I'm sorry, 12, I apologize, I'm trying to look at it right here, and it's, I'm blanking, it's 13 for season 2, and it's 13. So I was right the first time. But again, whereas you had, I would say, about 9 episodes in season 1 that were really heavy plot focused, and what I mean by that is, you were being, there was, like, the first, at least 4 episodes were plot driven because you were being introduced to Scooney and Mocha. You had sort of the first sort of plot thing to deal with their relationship, well, actually the first 5 for that matter, and you had, you were introduced to both Yukari and Kokoro, Hasebe Kuruma. Then you had the episode where you were introduced to Mizori. You had the episode you were introduced to Genin. So really 10, actually, when I think about it. You then had the 2 episodes with Ruby. You had the 2 episodes with the... or should I say 3 episodes with the student, not student council, but the discipline committee. So 3, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 2. I'm sorry, I'm doing math here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Really, for most of the series, there was a driven plot through season 1. As I did math. Here, it's mostly filler, which is, again, thank you for joining me down this road as I got to my point. But really, here it's mostly filler, and I can really only recall 5 episodes that are really focused on any sort of plot that's going through the series. I mean, you have the first 2 episodes with the introduction to Kokoa, and all that being explained. You have... get the last 3 episodes with Lilith Mirror and what happens to Mocha with her her inner Mocha and coming out because the outer Mocha sacrifices herself to save the Academy's barrier. That episode, the episode where Tsukune goes to get another Rosario for her to bring the outer Mocha back. So those 3 episodes... the bath, episode 8, which is the bath and the vampire, which, again, deepens sort of relationship between Mocha and Tsukune. I would say, and like I said, the first 2, and then I would say the parents coming to the Academy episode. So, 6 episodes. So, compared to the 11 episodes that were more plot-focused in the season 1, you had 6 episodes of a 13 series that were... So, less episodes that were really plot important. And mind you, that's what I'm saying. It's not so much that it focused on a plot going through the series as much that it was plot important. You know, characters that are introduced here are important to the plot going forward. Really, for the most part, the series was just really a whole lot of what would probably be called filler episodes, but really just, you know, fun episodes. Again, we're here to watch the gang get into more shenanigans. Whether it be with a monster from India that wants to feed everybody curry, which, by the way, I love that episode. Curry. You know, turning them all into curry zombies. I need curry. 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 that's one of my... Again, another one of my favorite. To the... school nurse that gives Yukari big boobs and matures her body. And just to the... what was a... basically a clips... not even clips episode. It's not a clips episode, but a... like 10 small mini episodes in one type of episode. To the aforementioned Kok-chan transforming into a pretty boy and turning all the girls in school into his harem. Though he couldn't quite turn... Kokoa, which led to his downfall. It's hilarious. There's just a lot of fun episodes. And again, it's not to sit there and say that they aren't fun. But just to point out, which is the whole point of this train that's derailed off its track long ago. It's already down the hill. You know, there's like 35 dead. The ambulance is only getting to it now. But... then again, it's not as plot-focused as season one. Yes, the overall plot is them having fun, but there is an overall sort of deep... I guess really that big plot I'm talking about is the furthering of Skune and Mocha's relationship, which we'll be getting to in a second. There is also themes that do happen to perpetrate this season. But they're very light, and really, you really have to think about it. It really is to the point to where, compared to the themes that were in season one, the themes in season ones were literally like neon lights saying, pay attention to this! As opposed to the very, very light, very under announced sort of little minute theme that you really have to think about what's happening in each episode to really understand, oh, this theme was really going throughout. Because it's a theme that's, for the most part, at the end of the series, was really established, which is, you know, being pure of heart, being yourself, how important you are to your friends, being you. Not as maybe deep as sort of the sort of discrimination theme and how discrimination is bad theme from season one, but again, a very, you know, sort of traditional harem type of theme. Just again, very lightly underplayed. Again, it's something that I really didn't even realize was there until I sat down, like, okay, what am I going to say about this story? Well, this episode had this, so what did that episode mean? What did that episode... Oh, wow. There were these connections here that I can connect all these episodes to. You really don't realize it until you sit down and think about it. So that very minute theme was really there, but not as big as what the... And again, the theme in the first season wasn't really talked about overall that much. I mean, I make it sound here like the theme in season one was just like blaring bright lights, but it wasn't. I'm just saying it's so underplayed here that the ones in season one might as well have been neon lights. But it's there, and I mean, I enjoyed it. It's very traditional, and it's being a very traditional harem theme. Next, we can talk about the relationship, like I said, about between Skune and Mocha. Again, its connection to the plot. Again, to Skune, both Mochas are important to him. He cares about both Mochas. You know, he cares about the inner, absolutely, but the outer one is the one he spends all his time with. And to an extent, they might as well be two different girls. At the same point in time, he cares about all of them, just like he cares about all the group. There's a very prolific thing that Skune's character says in the Lilith Mirror episode. And that is, you know, where the girls are saying, where basically he's able to break the spell by telling the girls, look, none of you can replace Mocha, just like Mocha can't replace you. You're all important to me. I care for all of you. And if there's any one of you, would break my heart. Or, not that he says that last line, but basically, that's the point he's getting at. And again, that's a very apropos point to this group of friends. Which again, to Skune, that's what he sees them as. He sees them, while he cares for probably a lot of them in a more deeper way than he may even care to admit, he cares more about their friendship than he does any type of lust or love or want to get married or anything, though he likes to get deep. He sort of make a joke about it, which we'll get to. But he likes to make they sort of punch the fourth wall, where, you know, inner Mocha towards the end, where inner Mocha's out and the outer Mocha's gone. Like, do you want to get deep eyed with me? I'm like, huh? Okay. Oh, Mocha. What's going on? Oh, Mocha. Oh, Skune. This is not working. Well, again, we're going to get to more of that in comedy, because they really break the fourth wall. But again, this idea, basically, that the outer Mocha, the Mocha we see all the time, is just as important as the inner Mocha. Again, it's more of, again, being true to one's heart. Skune being finally true to his heart. And a lot of the girls sort of following that throughout the little things that happen through the season. You definitely feel like Tsukune and Boku's relationship has moved up. Unfortunately, it's still this far distance away. Again, being that this is the last season that has been made, and I mean, I'm sure at one point they could make more of this. I'd hope they start from here. But again, it left off in a very harem type of series place where they really didn't make a choice, even though they were sort of hinting at a choice, being the outer Mocha, who's really the fake Mocha, and it's yeah. But in that sense, it connected to that overall sort of minute theme of being true to one's heart, and that overall plot. Really, the big thing to talk about here is, again, comedy and fan service, because as I said, this season, if nothing else, is all about real the gang being together and the shenanigans they get through and the comedy and the fan service. No, the breaking of the fourth wall. They constantly do it. Like I said, I love the breaking of the fourth wall. I always find those jokes funny. I know Jerry Jewell always coming in and announcing the fight. Different running gags, like in episode 8, where, you know, as the stuff that's happening at Skune's home is happening, which is very funny on itself, and it's like, which I'll get to in a second, but, you know, they show Kokoa trying to come from basically where the Kyoto trip was, and it turns out she accidentally is going all over Japan because she doesn't know where to go. But, you know, again, two running gags. One, she's continuously passing different forms of transportation. You know, first it's a truck. Then it's a guy in a sports car. Then it's a bullet train. And mind you, all of them being equally as funny. You know, truck go, I got passed by the strawberry. And mind you, that's very Russian. I got passed by the strawberry. And which leads to the ultimate fun of her passing the bullet train. And it starts out, you know, bullet train, and there's a guy that's grumpy, the hostess, like, sir, I don't think you should be doing that. Then they show her passing the bullet train, like, and there's a lady in the mech going, that girl got strawberry panties on. Whoosh! Everybody in the side of the window. Hostess going, ugh. And then the whole train going, we got passed by the strawberry. I don't know why that makes me laugh. It may be one of those things you have to see it to laugh at it, but I just find it funny. And then, of course, that episode is, you know, all the girls show up at Skune's house, and just the added point of prepping it by, you know, his mother earlier that day was watching, I don't know, like, something that's like the equivalent of, like, More or one of those daytime talk shows. You know, the one that very, like, Jerry, Springer, but not Jerry Springer. Shows that are like More and shows like that. You know, this one is you are not the father. You know, those type of shows. Because I don't watch them, so I don't care that those are their names. I apologize. But in this case, you know, the guy's going, what do you think your child is doing? Do you know that there's a rampant teenage sexuality going on out there? Blah, 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 blah. Which leads into, you know, Skune coming home, and then all these girls are showing up, and, you know, Kurumo is just saying, I love him, and I wonder, you know, I want to be his destined one. Yukari's saying, well, Michael is to, you know, to have a wild night of passion with Boka and Skune, which, like, what? And also, Skune's cousin is in on this. And then, of course, Mizuri going, I just came here to make babies with him. And as a harem and etchi fan, I applaud. I applaud them. I'm like, thank you. Thank you for being funny. And that's just one episode. I mean, you have the Curry episode, as I talked about, the Curry zombies. Hilarious. The Jerry Jewels episode. Hilarious. There's the episode where the parents come to visit. And, you know, you have Kurumo and Mizuri's parents who come to visit. Turns out they're rivals because they were rivals for the same guy back when they were part of Yukai Academy. Only for the guy turned out to be there and he's, I'm blanking on the name and I apologize. But the very first monster that Mocha faces in the first season, his parents... His father is the guy that they were fighting over, and now he's, of course, fat and bald, and like, That was a very funny episode. Of course, we had titty laser beams in that episode. I kid you not. Anytime we have laser beams coming from a woman's breast, okay, that's purely Japanese and that's purely funny as hell. The skiing episode with the Yeti, hilarious. Kari's maturity episode. All the sort of these filler episodes were just funny. Again, the breaking of the fourth wall. They really ranched up sort of etchy comedy in the series more than what it was in season one. And I think that's the point I was trying to get at earlier, to where it was light and a bit more natural coming. It felt a bit forced, if there's a criticism I had to say about the comedy here. Not that it wasn't funny, but it's like, well, we're being a bit more raunchy than we were. And I didn't feel like they needed to be. I mean, it was perfect the way it was. It's to put it in a way, they embraced the harem and etchiness that everybody says they were a bit more. Again, and I don't have a problem with that. But there's a problem I have with that, which I'm going to get into in a moment. But you know, overall, the comedy, fan service, really well done. The pace of the series, again, same as season one, really well done. The story just continuously moved forward. Which gets to my last point. As I said, there was, again, this idea of it's an etchy and a harem series, and they should embrace it, which it did. Again, like I said, I don't have a problem with the series design. It's going to embrace more of the etchy, more of the harem side. It's its own series, and it shouldn't be, you know, for those type of changes, it's just something different, and really makes it its own unique series in its way. I just don't think it's as good as the first season. And I say that because, like I said at the beginning of this review, there's a lot of people that were saying that this season is better than the first season. And it seemed to me, in reading the reviews and after watching and everything, that the reason they say it's better, and one of them actually do say this, is that it embraced the etchiness, embraced the harem aspect. As if, you know, because basically they weren't showing nipples or anything, they weren't embracing it. I don't think that's true. I think it was just a different way they were doing the series. Again, remember, there was a full, I think it was the summer season that was between these two. I think the first season came out in the spring season, and then the second season came out in the fall. That being said, the issue I have here is that there's a lot of people to where they've labeled this as an etchy and harem series, so it has to have a certain amount of, you know, it has to have the nipples, or it has to have be done a certain way. It has, you know, we've deemed this is what this series is. It doesn't have a plot. It doesn't have anything like that. There's no themes or anything. It should be all about the comedy, and it just seems like they're angry at the first season for Gasp having a plot. And they like the second season because there's less of a plot and more focus on the comedy. Now, again, I don't think the series is wrong either which way. But, yeah, it's just, I have this problem. Like, well, we've labeled it an etchy or harem series, or it's both. So there can't be any plot in it. But I just think that's so wrong of us as a fandom to do. You know, comedy can have a plot. Etchy and harem, regardless of the genre, etchy, harem, horror, drama, comedy, adventure, slice of life, they can all have a plot, they can all have an overall theme. And especially in regards to etchy and harem, just because there's a lot of fan service doesn't mean that there isn't a plot going on or there isn't themes. You know, when I sit down and I watch a lot of these shows, you know, I always ask myself at the end of the episode, okay, what was the point of the episode? Was there any character evolution? Which, again, mind you, this series did have. A lot of the characters had a lot of evolution. Again, being that this series was made towards the end of Manga 1, for those who don't know, the Rosario Vampire manga, has a part one and a part two, and part two is actually still going on now in Shonen Jump Advance. But this was made towards the end of season one, and all they knew is really sort of the beginnings of part two of the manga, in which Kokoa was introduced. But yeah, again, there was... the characters did evolve. In that sense, the acting did a great job in portraying those points of the characters growing. And I fault myself for not really talking much about that. It's just, it's much of the same. But it's just think that we're, okay, well, we labeled this series a harem and an ecchi. So the best season is the one that's just focused on the comedy. I just think it shows no respect to the plot that season one had, and they do this for a lot of shows. As of this recording, the new fall season has come out. And one of the shows that has premiered is called I Want to Be the Strongest. And the basic premise of it is it's about a Japanese female idol who decides to become a pro wrestler and her journey through the ranks. With character designs by the same people behind Queen's Blade and Iki Tosa. Everybody knew that this was going to be a fan service show. When, mind you, there is. But what has gotten me in seeing, like the reviews on... again, I'm not going to say... reviews of major, well-known sites of anime news, I'll say. You can connect the dots, if you will. Just giving them it a horrible grade and reading the reviews, I'm looking at it like, are you even watching the show? Or are you just saying, okay, there's a fan service. Did I like the fan service? No. Even some going into sort of politicizing it is some reason, what example of why anime is sexist and picket. Oh my god, it just drove me nuts. As a wrestling fan, you know, the first episode, the way they portrayed the character was very reminiscent the same way Stone Cold became popular. You know, again, for those who didn't see it, I should go into it here. Okay, I already did. I don't know where I want to go with this, but basically, first episode, you know, the two idols are sent on a a job to, you know, help a small wrestling organization called Team Berserk that's of female wrestlers. They're playing around. They're disrespecting the ring. One of the female wrestlers that has a stick up her ass has a problem with it, beats up one of the girls. The main character, main idol, says, okay, I'm challenging you to a match, comes out, does good for a little bit, but then, you know, she gets put in camel crunches and submission holds, gets body slammed. She even gets put into a shame hold to try to shame her into submitting, but she doesn't. She refuses to submit, and finally, she puts her in a chokehold, chokes her out. So, in other words, she never gives up. She loses because she basically blacked out from the pressure. Is forced to have her hair cut, but as she sees the female wrestler continuing to disrespect her, makes the decision, I'm going to become a pro wrestler, get a rematch, and beat you. All people would notice is the episode and the weird yelling, the pain. Yeah, she's... and I'm just sitting there like, okay, I understand that they're showing the booty and there are these cross shots and everything. But two things. One, the cross shot is... they're also showing the muscles in pain. Why nobody notices that, I don't know. But also, yeah, she's in pain because she's in an excruciating submission hold! But well, it's a harem and ecchi series, so obviously the screaming is supposed to be turning us on. No, the screaming is so that you can understand the type of pain she's going through. The reason I bring this up is this is what happens in our fandom. Is that if it gets labeled a drama, it has to be done a certain way. If it's labeled as an ecchi or a harem, it has to be done a certain way. If it's a slice of life, it has to be done a certain way. And that's just not true. And mind you, I talk all the time, like, the difference between us and Japanese viewers is, you know, again, with their anime, they expect tropes. I'm not talking about tropes here. I'm talking about sitting there and saying, oh, well, this show has ecchi and harem. Oh, well, there can't be any plot to it. Yes, there can be. And I see the same thing happening here, where one season is being put above another because it so-called embraces the ecchi and the harem-ness. Whereas, really, the season two was just more fun and more sort of filler episodes. They're two different seasons in that extent. But one isn't better than the other. They're just done two different ways. Both are well. I actually think that season one is better than season two. Because I think the etchiness and the harem aspects are done in a more light, more natural way that fits the series feel, fits the sort of Tim Burton-esque feel of the series. If that reason, I like season one more than the traditional sort of ecchi and harem comedy route that season two went. You know, I just think it's wrong of us to basically label series as something with no plot and saying, you know, well, it's good when it was just focused on the comedy and didn't pretend like it didn't have a plot. Because that's wrong. It's never wrong for a series to have a plot or to have a theme, and we shouldn't do that. That was my sort of rant and tirade there. I apologize. So at the end of the day, what do I think of Rosario Vampire Season 2, Capu 2, whichever form of the title you want to use? Well, you know what? Like I said, it's a good series. It really is. For all that it sounded like, yeah, it's just more of the same, it's more of the same. It's just, my expectations for it, after seeing all these reviews, were very high. And yet it was more of the same. That being said, there was character growth. A bit minute, but there was a bit of character growth and a bit of maturity seen at the end of the season for the characters, just like it was in the first season. The comedy was great. I mean, it's a great, funny series. I enjoyed it. And I've watched it over and over again before. I mean, I'm getting to reviewing this now, but I've watched both these seasons before on Netflix. So it's a series that I've enjoyed before, I enjoyed now, and I'll continue to enjoy. I don't think it's as good as season one, but just because I personally like the more of the focus on the plot and that theme that's there, but doesn't hit you over the head. It's a very light theme, to put it in a way. But again, that's my personal preference. At the end of the day, this series is just as good as season one. It's just done in a different way. So at the end of the day, I give Rosario Vampire Capuchu a 4 out of 5. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I did not expect me to go on that big, big rant there. but it's just something I felt talking about, and I got kind of sidetracked. I apologize. You have to understand this. You do not know the anger I had this past Sunday night, where I went and I watched The World's Strongest, and I loved it as both an ecchi fan, and also as a wrestling fan, you know, saying like, oh my god, her finishing move at some point is going to be Daniel Bryan's knee! Yes! 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 I am a huge wrestling fan, for those who don't know. Which is why you can hear me on the WrestleCast this past Friday. I'll look it up slowly, as I'll probably talk about it in when I pick my stuff here. But yeah, it's just one of those things to where I'm a big wrestling fan and I love that show, and then I read the reviews from certain networks, and it's like, really? Really? That's what you thought of the show? I mean, again, everybody's entitled to the review, but it's just like, did they pay attention and give any thought to why this stuff is happening in the series? It didn't seem like there was any attention being paid. But yeah. But that's it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I almost called it Rosario Vampire, but this episode of Tom's Prerogative. If you have any comments of any kind you want to leave the show, remember there are several ways you can do that. First, you can email the show at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page that you can find at Facebook by going to Facebook and searching for The Absolution Network. We should be the most obvious one to find. We have our logo that has the A and the N into it. But like us, leave us a comment there. You can also leave us a comment by going to the website directly that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Of course, while you're there, check out all the other 132 Productions content. Of course, that includes the Otaku Momentum right here on the Absolution Network, Gene and Chris and the Shaft Plus podcast that you can find at www.shaftplus.com. And, of course, all my other podcasts, which includes Tokyo SOS Podcast, which reviews every Godzilla movie ever made. This month, we're going to be coming out with our review of Godzilla Final Wars, as I finally got to the last Godzilla movie, at least until this summer. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. You can also find the Comic Book Crazy Podcasting Network, my other podcast network that includes Comic Book Crazy, and Hexcast, the only podcast that reviews every issue of Jim Pillen's Terrell, Witch of the Black Rose, at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, like I said before, I was on the latest episode, as of this recording, of the WrestleCast. It's episode 213. You can find that at You can find it at www.rvtentertainment.com. Go there, search for the WrestleCast, and I'll give you the episode list. It's episode 213. I've actually been on a number of episodes, but I was asked to be on for a guest host for episode 213. So listen to me there. Of course, you'll hear me coming onto the invitation there on the big Thomas's big birthday bash bonanza, which I hope, if I can get the time, because there's a lot of editing to do for it, get out this Sunday if possible. So those are all the places you can hear me. So, and of course, while you're on any of my sites, remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar to do many great stuff. That, of course, includes Michael Bailey and Fuse from the Long Box. And, of course, the Crisis to Crisis that he does with the good friend Jeffrey Taylor. Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawl Space. Steven Slacker's Major Spoilers Podcast. And, of course, Scott Gardner's 2-2 Freaks Podcasting Network. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, you know, it's funny, I made mention earlier of this show being a bit Tim Burton-esque. We're going to an anime that many people also call Tim Burton, or the anime version of a Tim Burton world, I should say. That's right. Next week, we get our death sights ready as we jump into Soul Eater. So until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
about does her. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom, signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.